themselves.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo, good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How you doing today?
Man, pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty good.
That's good.
I had to think about it just a second, but yeah, man, we're doing okay. Things are rocking and rolling, and man, it's just been a fun summer. So getting settled, got here in a few weeks. Family coming in town for the little boy's baptism here at the church, and so
yeah.
That'll be fun. And got some tobacco-related stuff getting planned for the fall, including a visit from the folks with Chacombe and Nording Pipes to the
Ooh.
Country Squire. So that'll
Ooh.
Be a lot of fun. And
okay.
Yeah, man, should be good. So we're excited, just looking to get it geared back up in a. I was about to say a post-COVID world, but maybe I'll just say a muted.
Post-quarantine
world.
Yeah.
So, that's man, right. Things are great. What's going on with you, dude?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. You know, the funny thing is, I have you ever seen Portlandia? Are you familiar with that at all?
Actually, I've seen two or three episodes of that. Yeah.
Okay. So they relatively frequently had Jeff Goldblum on as kind of like you come in and play a couple of different characters. And one of the main ones he did, he would come on as kind of like a weird retail shop owner. And so in one
Where are you going with this, Bo?
you'll see. In one instance, he was selling like things in jars, terrariums and that sort of thing. And, you know, he's quite quirky. And he was just Jeff Goldblum, right? Like,
yeah.
he was just being himself.
A national treasure. Yeah.
Exactly. But there's one where he plays the pullout king. He sells pullout mattresses. And is known throughout Portland as the Pullout King. And there's a commercial in which he is, you know, really kind of amping up his business and talking about this sale they've got going on. But he is, how do I say this? He doesn't want people to know about it. And yet it's the commercial of him telling people that they've got a sale going on. It's hilarious because obviously Jeff Goldblum is hilarious. And seeing him trying to tell people while also trying to hide the fact that he has a sale going on.
So he has to in some way communicate it because it's a commercial for the sale. But
right.
He's also trying to hide the fact that there's a sale.
He's like it is a big deal and not very many people know about it, nor should they, is kind of his his mindset. And you know, it's funny because as we go into this, I happen to have some information that not very many people know, but I feel like they should know. And that is that you are having a sale.
But I want everyone to know about it.
Right. You're a full on shill. You're not going to Jeff Goldblum this. You're going to go all the way.
No, that's right. That's right. We have a limited time summer sale going on. For, you know, the hot weather months, we are enjoying some of those sweeter tobaccos this summer, and they're so refreshing and sometimes give us a little pep in our step when it's hot and muggy outside, and so particularly here in the South. But, man, for the next several weeks, doing 15% off Blue Ribbon, Delta Honeydew, Peach Melba, Seersucker, and Trumpeter at thecountrysquireonline.com. So if you go there, you can use the code SWEETSUMMER21. That's just sweet. Summer 21, all one word, no spaces. And if you put that in, you'll get 15% off those tobaccos I just named. So check it out. We'd love to send you some fresh hand-blended pipe tobacco right to your front door wherever you live.
There you go. All right, man, last week we started a brand new series, a kind of a mini series, where you, as the master of pipes, not to be confused with the doctor of pipes, with whom I need to issue an apology for last week's embarrassing and highly disrespectful commentary on his very legitimate doctorate of pipes.
It's very legitimate.
Very legitimate.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely.
So
he's got a medal to prove it.
I just want to officially apologize to one Dr. Brian Levine and just pay complete full respects there and all honor do in that regard. But regardless, we've got a master of pipes here, ladies and gentlemen, who is going to be educating us, continuing on our series on how to train your palate. Last week was really kind of setting the stage, going over the terminology, getting the understanding of, to some extent, the importance of why one would even want to train their palate in the first place as well.
Yeah.
going into kind of the cerebral nature also in terms of how taste and smell connects us to memory. And in many respects, the pipe tobaccos do that as well. And so, man, you are going to take us from that 101 to 102.
Yeah.
Man, how do we train our palates?
Oh, my. Yeah. We are expanding this on out, which is going to be fun. This is a kind of a mini series as we explore, developing, expanding your palate and understanding those tobacco notes better, understanding why you like a tobacco or maybe why you don't like a tobacco as well. You know, it's a lot of fun. We're just taking a kind of an expanded look at this. Last week, we gave that general overview of, you know, what developing your palate might look like, looking at these different aspects. We looked at a host of things that you may not have considered when discussing your tobacco smoking experience, you know, considered things about how the room note is affecting the taste and about how, you know, your memories might come into play while you're experiencing the tobacco and how that changes it or the pH of your body, or if it's got a certain mouthfeel to it and the quote unquote body feel as the nicotine has its effect and the strength of tobacco kind of comes into play. So as we mentioned before, this entire discussion springs from someone having a strong positive or negative experience in smoking a tobacco. Are they really enjoying it or are they really not? And then whether they know it or not, they ask why. You know, why do I like this blend so much? We talked about different tobaccos that you might really enjoy, but you did the illusion or the thing about, you know, your teacher asking you why you liked a certain painting, right? And you're like, well, I just like it. And they ask why you like it. And you're like, well, it's pretty, you know, it's nice looking. It, you know, and then you start to unpack that. Well, I mean, I do like the colors, the vibrancy of it is beautiful. The whole thing works together well to have a nice symmetry or whatever it might be. And so, you know, just digging deeper to start to unpack some of those things. So there's a lot to cover here. And as such, we decided to break it up into a multi-part series. And this is going to be a three-part series. Today, we're going to dive into the tasting notes and what might commonly be referred to as flavor, though we defined flavor differently last week as the combination of taste and smell. Next week, we'll wrap up with some tasting notes and then also explore other factors that affect your palate. So it should be a lot of fun. And we're going to start today's discussion by a question I'm going to ask Bo. Bo, are you ready for a question?
I think so. I didn't know there would be a test this early on in class.
Well, it's your turn, because last week you made me pick between some of the most famous pipe blenders in the world. So
that ain't over, man. It's only going to get worse.
I brought my bottle of bourbon, Old Elk bourbon, with me again. I'm in good shape. Right. We're ready to go. Okay. Bo, do me a favor. I want you to tell me what vanilla tastes like.
Oh, okay. Okay. Wow. Vanilla. So
what does it taste like?
Sweet, bitter. Man, I don't know that I have the language to communicate that. It tastes awesome, if I could call back to last
week. It's awesome. This is awesome. What about almond? Yeah, what about almond?
Almond? Ooh, well, all right. So almond has like I guess, woody taste.
Okay.
Would be how I'd say that, but also kind of a unique sweetness that's in there as well. And maybe a waxy texture, but that's not really taste. Ooh, I don't know.
But is it? Is waxy part of the flavor? Is it maybe not a taste, but a flavor? Is the all that's good. What, okay. Let me throw you one more. What about pepper? What does pepper taste like?
Pepper tastes like heaven, my friend. That is what pepper tastes like.
Are you the doctor of pepper, Dr. Pepper?
No, what Dr. Pepper does not taste like pepper.
What does pepper taste like?
Heat, if you're doing it right. Man, what does pepper pepper taste like? Pepper.
Exactly. we describe, you know, what's funny about this, and of course, so you describe almond, for instance, as it's woody and waxy. There's a pepper, it's got a heat to it. That we describe tastes in these categories that define them by what other things taste like, you know?
Right.
There's always this way of, okay, well, I don't have verbiage for what that tastes like, but let me tell you what else it tastes like, right? And the goal, the hope is that the person you're communicating to has some sense of this this language that we're using, the, you know, some experience of these other standard candles, if you were, of the tasting world. It's like, you know, okay, well, I don't know how to explain vanilla, but I know how to explain, you know, something like, you know, sugar, or something maybe a little more specific, like nougat, or, you know, something like that, you know, a sweet cream, or, you know, and so where do you go from there? And so we have this way of describing tastes in these categories, again, by defining them by what other things taste like. And, you know, we do this with other adjectives as well, emotions too. We defined, for instance, define both the word kind, like that's a very kind person.
Okay. Nice, thoughtful. Yeah. Nice and thoughtful.
Yeah. Yeah. Define the word sad.
Like a pain or hurt. Yeah. Pain or hurt.
Painful, hurtful, whatever, you know, I mean, so we're using other, you know, words that also could be defined similarly. You might define the word pain or, you know, hurtful with the word sad if the kind of question were flipped around. You know, as tobacconists, we're constantly trying to drum up ways to help pipe smokers describe their sensations. You know, how do you divvy up tobaccos like this? We can use traditional tasting notes. You know, you think about things like salty and sweet and sour and bitter, or you can use more generalized terms like sweet versus natural, or sweetened versus unflavored. At the Squire, a lot of times we use the funnel kind of starts by saying, okay, well, is it aromatic or non-aromatic? You know, this is our kind of our clunky way of communicating. Is the tobacco flavored artificially, or not with artificial flavoring, but is it flavored with something, or is the main character of the tobacco the flavor of the leaf itself? You know, that's the non-aromatic kind of concept there. So, you know, will it taste sweet, or will it taste like something that's more natural, or maybe even savory? And so that's what we're kind of talking about. And so with tasting notes, you know, I want you to be exposed to kind of I hate to put it this way because they're just kind of overdone in the flavor world, but I want to think of it as a wheel of flavors regarding common flavors in the pipe tobacco world. Okay, I want you to think of a wheel, and we've got different wedges. It's like a pie chart, right? You've got different wedges in this wheel that contain different flavors, and as you get exposed to these flavors, you'll start realizing that there's little connections that go with things that are this type of flavor versus this type of flavor, and maybe this flavor over here on this side of the wheel kind of goes with another flavor on the other side of the wheel in more of a kind of a natural way. Those two things play together well. And so we're going to start exploring some of that today. We'll start out with some of the more obvious suspects in taste with the tasting notes, and then we'll drill down later into next week into the more you know, nebulous, or dare we say esoteric tasting notes.
Ah, I see what you did there.
It's a very dangerous word in the show, in the pipe community in general.
Right.
I'll start by saying, as we're discussing these tasting notes, okay, we're going to talk about a lot of taste, or a lot of what you might call flavors, and I want to leave out the words aromatic or non-aromatic or natural. I want to leave that out of the conversation for now. Okay, so the focus is on the taste itself. The more you pay attention to the conversation, you'll realize that common tastes transcend these categories, right? So you can have a non-aromatic tobacco that you taste black cherry in. That's a thing, right? You can have a, you know, Virginia ribbon that gives you a citrus experience there. You can also have an aromatic tobacco that makes you think of a peaty smokiness, right? That's all part of the thing, you know. So I kind of want to leave those aromatic and non-aromatic categories kind of behind for now, and just explore the tasting notes themselves. So
that's so good, because I feel like a lot of people, they're like, the instance they associate a flavor with something in pipe tobacco, they just instantly assume they're smoking an aromatic.
Yeah, they're out. Yeah. And that's not the case. You know, when you and I, we go through these Squire Selects, which is just a glorified excuse for us to drink whiskey and ketchup.
It's professional. That's work. It's really important.
Yeah. But, you know, what do we, I mean, these are excellent products that are unflavored brown waters that are, you know, some of the most highly sought after whiskeys in the world, some of which are not as highly sought after and very unrespectable. But, you know, but when we try these whiskeys, a lot of times we pick up notes like vanilla and dark chocolate or honey or, you know, a pepper to it or something of that nature. And does that mean what we're saying is that the whiskey is flavored with those things? Well, no, of course not, right? We're just saying that, no, the whiskey has that note of it in there that it kind of reminds us of, right? We're trying that whole thing about the comparative, like, okay, well, you know, what does whiskey taste like? Well, okay, well, whiskey tastes like all these other things. And so that's kind of what we're discussing. So if you're looking at what you might consider a flavor wheel or a flavor pie chart or a tasting pie chart, we're going to start with a couple of the more obvious suspects here, particularly in the pipe world. And the first one, give me that cherry tobacco. We are going to start with the fruit taste.
Okay.
I feel like you have to start with the fruit taste, you know?
It's that's the beginner. No, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
No, it's good. I mean, and again, there's a lot here, right? The most traditional tobaccos in the United States are fruit-based. They're wildly popular. Some of the most, you know, the best-selling tobaccos in the world, and there's some great tradition of flavoring pipe tobacco, and a lot of that happens with fruit. We can describe tobacco as fruity, but what would you say if you had to describe? I'm really putting you on the spot today, and I'm not sorry at all about it.
No, it's fine.
If you had to
keep it going,
if you had to define the word fruity, what would come to mind, Bo?
So that's difficult, right? Because like there's fruit in and of itself, like there's so many different flavor profiles that you'll find there. At the moment, I'm thinking mango because I had like a mango cake the other day.
Yeah.
And so I guess I'm thinking more kind of in a sweet tanginess, perhaps.
Okay. That's good.
But it's difficult because, again, like you could also have like an apple or a lemon, which is going to be sour. And, you know, it's impossible.
Man, that's great. I mean, you're being a good sport. You're playing right into my hand. So, you know, a raspberry is a fruit, but so is an apple and so is a peach. And these are, you know, not even to speak of things like tomatoes or, you know, kumquats or all these other weird things that are, you know, that are fruits. And what do they taste like, right? Well, you know, people, when they come to you and they say, I want something fruity or I experience this as fruity, that can mean a lot of different things, right? Mm. Fruit are generally broken down into six different categories. And this is, we have, when we think about fruit as one of the largest kind of pie pieces in our tasting wheel that we're envisioning here, within fruit, you kind of have a variety of things. And so number one, the berry flavor. Berries are juicy fruits that are often tart and small. So we think of as cranberries, blackberries, raspberry, grape. You know, these are small, thin-skinned little fruits that have that kind of tartness to them. Very pleasant. You can eat a handful of them as a nice snack. You have core fruits, which are hard, fibrous fruits, or they have hard, fibrous cores. That includes seeds, and it's surrounded by a mildly sweet, semi-juicy flesh. And so we think of apples and pears. Love apples and pears. And then we have citrus fruits, which are, you know, the thick outer rind containing, you know, those membranes, which kind of have creates these little segments of fruit flesh. And you've got orange and tangerine and grapefruit and lemon and lime there. Those are going to have a tart or maybe a sour flavor, to use the word you used. And then you have what I love to be called stone fruits. These are stone fruits, or you may be like, what's that? Well, these are pitted fruits, or fruits that have a hard pit or stone-like object in the middle of them, surrounded by soft flesh and then a thin skin. And so we think of plums and peaches and apricots and mangoes. Even though mango doesn't have that stone in the middle, a lot of times it's kind of thrown in with these because it shares a lot of other other a lot of other aspects. We have melons, large fruits with fibrous flesh and very thick skins and tons of seeds scattered throughout. Very, very liquidy, watery. We think, of course, of watermelon, honeydew, and cantaloupe. And then finally, we have tropical fruits. And this is, in some sense, it's a catch-all for the fruits we just don't know what the heck to do with. We think of, but they are tropical fruits, though. I mean, a lot of them, you know, we tend to think of these as growing in that kind of, equatorial region. You know, we think of coconut, banana, pomegranates, kiwi, pineapple, and even raisins. And so, we've got
next
these...
time I get a pipe tobacco, I'm going to say, oh, this tastes tropical.
I know. Ooh, that's so tropical. What a great raisin flavor. Yeah. And that'll be the last day we ever record. I'm just kidding. So, you know, fruits come, we've got all these categories, right? So to say something is fruity, I mean, do you mean like a honeydew melon fruity or a cantaloupe fruity, or do you mean a cranberry fruit, or right. or do you mean a tangerine, or perhaps a pineapple? And I didn't mention cherry in all the different ones that I just right. mentioned, right? So now I'm going to read these categories back to you. Berries, core fruit, like an apple, citrus, stone fruit like a plum, melons, and tropical fruit. Which one does cherry belong in?
Core fruit, because it's got a pit.
You're close. It's actually a stone fruit.
Okay, but, okay.
It's interesting though. Most people would consider berries part of or a cherry as a part of the berry family, just by nature of its size and in shape and kind of a tart sweetness there, but it's actually a stone fruit. And so, man, there's nothing like getting a big bowl of those black cherries, and just plowing through a bunch of them and having to keep the trash can next to you to spit the seeds out or whatever. They're just so good. But cherries are actually stone fruit. So, fruit flavors are highly distinctive. They're highly familiar to most pipe smokers, especially in the modern age where, refrigeration and shipping are very common. It's a smaller world now, so it's easier for us to get exotic fruit flown in from crazy places and still be relatively fresh when it gets to, a small town like Jackson, Mississippi. But fruit flavors are also highly polarizing as well. I mean, the most loved pipe tobacco flavor is probably cherry, and the most hated pipe tobacco flavor is probably cherry. it gives us, though, the nice thing, because a lot of people are exposed to this realm of flavor within the fruit world. It gives us a really nice baseline to talk about. So, as you're smoking tobaccos, be thinking about, maybe throw out the broad category of fruit, but, you've got a rich English style blend. Are you experiencing, or maybe a matured Virginia mixed with some dark fire Kentucky, or maybe a Perique, do you experience something similar to a plum? Do you experience something similar to a grapefruit or a tangerine? Is there an apple element to one of those non-aromatics that you're trying? Pay attention to those things, and I think you'll be surprised at what you're getting there as you're trying to determine why you like or don't like that tobacco.
Huh.
So kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Our next part of the tasting wheel that we're visiting is the this one is a hard one to encapsulate, as a lot of these are, but a lot of these flavors go together, and so we were forced to in some way. This part of the tasting wheel is one of my favorites. It's the confectionery and distilled part of the flavor wheel. And so we're kind of moving on to another section here. In the previous category, we talked about things that are harvested from a plant and consumed, in their basic form. You grow a cherry from a cherry tree, you pick it from the tree, you eat it, or you let it, same with a banana or, an apple or whatever. In this category, we're going to discuss things that are somewhat like that, but also tastes that are produced from natural products or sweeter natural products that don't taste like fruit, So it's a little more diverse category. We've got stuff that is both natural and combined to make flavors we all know and love. So we're talking here about things like candied flavors. We think caramel or chocolate. We think of dark chocolate, milk chocolate, cocoa. We think of molasses and nougat. We have natural confectionery flavors. So we've got like honey and vanilla, things like cane sugar. And then we have other things that are produced from, you know, natural sources, such as coffee. There's, you know, coffee beans, but then they're roasted. So you have a light roast coffee, a dark roast coffee, an espresso roast, maybe a coffee with milk or milk and sugar. And in our dairy kind of portion of this, you know, we have things like milk, cream, butter. All very pronounced as far as the flavors go. I had a gentleman come in the shop earlier today, and we were discussing nasal snuff, which we sell at the shop. And, you know, you don't see that very often around, but we are one of the few shops probably in the South that do carry it. And we were talking about a certain kind, and he said, I want you to try this type of nasal snuff. And I did. It's really good. It's a Wilson's of Sharrow, a version of Wilson's of Sharrow that I've never had before. And he said, all right, now in a minute, you're going to get this buttery sensation. And I knew exactly what he was talking about. It was really weird. Like, you don't think of buttery as something that you experience from, you know, a tobacco product or certainly something like nasal snuff, you know. But that's kind of it, you know. You get that that creamy, buttery, nice mouth coating that is interesting. It's just it's there, and we know how to process it. But how do you describe it? Well, you describe it in terms of other things. We also have kind of a bakery element to this part of the wheel, the confectionery and distilled section, the bakery element. When you refer to a tobacco as bready, also we have very distinct bread notes like rye or oat. These are things that have a distinctive flavor. They're bready, they're thick, they're weedy, or you think of silage or oat. You know, things of that nature that almost, you know, reminiscent of a barn or a silo or something of that nature. And then finally, we come to the most fun part of this part of the flavor wheel, which is, of course, liquor. We talk about tobacco in the essence of using words like, you know, whiskey, rum, even gin or vodka. Rum and whiskey tend to be the most common distilled flavors that we get from different pipe tobaccos, particularly aromatic tobacco. But of course, we talked about flake tobacco recently, and you know, those traditionally flavored with rum. We think of a lot of flake tobaccos as being non-aromatic, but still having a rum element there. So that's kind of interesting. Now, the preceding two categories, we've got fruit, and then we've got this kind of confectionery, bakery, distilled category, which, by the way, if you call it that, confectionery, bakery, distilled, it shortens to CBD, but not that kind of CBD.
Right.
That's another show. So, you know, mostly when you think about these, the fruit elements of this, but also these confectionery distilled type notes, we tend to think of aromatic tobaccos, right? You know, we tend to think of your, you know, a peach flavored tobacco, an apple flavored tobacco, or a chocolate or vanilla tobacco. So these things have obvious connotations to us, but I still want you to avoid making these terms, you know, marrying these terms like that. You'll be stunned to know how many non-aromatics are seen as, you know, creamy, chocolatey, plummy, you have that stone fruit, stewed flavor. There's a lot of that going on there that's very, very interesting. Now, we're going to move real quickly and cover briefly here to wrap up this week, categories that are commonly associated with both aromatics and non-aromatics. So we've kind of covered the ones that are associated with aromatics. Now we're moving to the middle ground. And the first we talk about herbal and spice flavors. And so much like fruit, these are derived from plants that are consumed and then harvested. So in their harvested form, you know, we harvest the plant and then we consume it. And so we think of these as being key supporting actors in some of our favorite food recipes. Licorice or anise flavor, cinnamon, clove, pepper, which we discussed before, cardamom, and baking spices or allspice that you might put in a nice pecan pie or a pumpkin pie or something of that nature. All of these can skew both ways, you know, so you've got this kind of herbal and spice connection here. And some of my favorite non-aromatic tobaccos have that licorice tang to them. There's just a little bit of that element in which you're kind of eating a good and plenty, you know. But then there's also aromatic tobaccos that have a nice pepperiness to them. You know, some get a nice nice pepperiness, you know, from a variety of tobaccos. Oddly enough, our Old Toby, that's one of our best-selling tobaccos at the Squire, has Perique in it, and it has a zing to it that is more reminiscent of that pepper. And so something to keep in mind. Finally, for today, we look at the part of the wheel that is the nuts part of the wheel. This category is difficult because it defies a lot of categories. The thing to realize is that when we think of nuts, we think, you know, peanuts, pecans, walnuts, whatever. Not all nuts are nuts.
Wait, what?
So, I mean, not all nuts are nuts.
Coconut's not a nut. I know that one.
Right, but some nuts are actually fruit.
Legumes. Oh.
And some things we call nuts are actually seeds.
Huh.
It'll drive you nuts.
Oh, wow. Walked right into that one.
But it's true. But it really is true. Some nuts are actually fruit and some are actually seeds. And so the common usage of the word nuts that we use today refers to these hard-walled edible kernels. From there, you're kind of on your own, you know, as far as the description. But we tend to, as you know, in baking notes and cooking notes, refer to these kind of hard-walled kernels, and so that's the idea of the nut. And we think, of course, of almonds and cashews and peanuts and walnuts. Those are obviously what take front and center there. Again, many of the most popular aromatics and non-aromatics are going to exhibit traits of this, right? Mm. So you've got that distinction there that I think is kind of interesting. So we'll leave it there today, but we'll resume next week completing our tour of the tasting notes wheel, and then we'll briefly explore some other things that will affect your palate as you're smoking some of your favorite pipe tobaccos. So it should be a lot of fun.
Now you kind of alluded to the fact that confectionery is kind of your favorite of the wheel spectrum or on the flavor wheel, if you will. But I'm curious if there is a specific flavor in particular that really speaks to you.
You know, I don't have an answer for that. I just think it's fun to work with, you know, and maybe it's not even my favorite to consume, but more my favorite to actually work with as a blender.
Wow. Which is kind of interesting. Yeah, huh.
As I'm saying that, yeah, because there's just so many things you can tinker with there that make it really fun. Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to give that some thought.
Man, that's fascinating. I had no clue. Like I'd never thought about it from the standpoint of like when you are creating all of these, you know, diverse, amazing blends, you really have to be mindful that they're not just all, you know, John David's favorite. you got to create unique blends that can kind of, you know, be for everyone.
And it's interesting, you know, people come up and they say, okay, I want an aromatic tobacco, or what they generally say is they want, give me something sweet or something that makes the room smell good. Okay. So that happens. And then the person comes up and you pull a jar down off the shelf that tastes like, let's say, coconut. Okay. Well, that person might hate coconut, or, you know, they wanted something sweet, but when they said sweet, they really meant fruity, right?
Right.
And when they mean fruity, they didn't really mean melon fruity. They meant like a berry fruity, you know? And so there's all these layers of it. It's really interesting. It's like, you know, you pull jars down for people to smell and they're like, no, we're not on the same page here. I said, I mean sweet, you know, like chocolate, right? And so, right. Oh, you're not talking about the fruit kind of sweet. You're talking about more of a confectionery sweet. So we visit the chocolates and the caramels and by, you know, tangentially kind of the, you know, the rums and the whiskeys and some of those more kind of savory sweet flavors and maybe go into the nut arena some, where you're talking about almonds and walnuts, you know. So it's interesting. There's layers of this. And I think the more you understand the verbiage, the more you at least experience those categories of flavor, categories of taste, it'll help you determine what you're enjoying about that pipe tobacco. So that's why we're doing all this.
Man. You know, this has all made me quite surprisingly hungry.
Yeah. I know, right?
So I know that when I go for my next, you know, be it confectionery, sweets, fruity or otherwise pipe tobacco, I'm going to want to get all of those flavors. And of course, we're going to do it by enjoying it with a good quality corn cob pipe from our friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
Yeah, one flavor we haven't mentioned yet is corn.
Oh.
But and I don't know if corn actually makes an appearance on the John David tasting wheel of pipe tobaccos. That,
right.
That as I'm thinking about it, we may need to publish that at some point. I don't know, but it might actually be helpful for folks to see some of this in a visual format.
Yeah, definitely.
But anyway, maybe it'll be the Country Squire Radio flavor wheel or something. But but anyway, having said all that, we are going to talk in the near future about vegetal flavors, and one thing that we know is that comes out of the ground that's interesting is corn, and we make some of the most fascinating pipes in the world and some of the most iconic pipes in the world out of corn, and it's made by our friends at Missouri Meerschaum right there in Washington, Missouri. So we talked last week, we introduced the Volcano pipe that they just came out with, and we're talking about that again this week. We really like you to consider getting one. It's a really, really handsome pipe. It's a medium-sized bowl and just has a beautiful finish, kind of a rough, ruddy color, natural finish on it. And so it's just very handsome. Retails for $10.99. You can go to corncobpipe.com, and it comes in a straight or a bent filtered variety. And check it out. If you order one today, they'll ship it right to your door.
There you go. And of course, big thanks to the good friends at Missouri Meerschaum for sponsoring the show.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, man. Pipe question of the week coming in this week by Kirk. Here's what Kirk had to say. I love the show and working on listening to them all. I was hoping I could get some of your insight on bowl screens and how long does it take to build up cake on a new pipe. I've picked up the pipe about a month ago and still trying new tobaccos to see what I like. Thanks for your ongoing information. An informative show that, again, is Kirk. All right, so bowl screens and building up cake. To me, this seems like two separate questions. Were they related?
I think it is. I think these are two separate questions. So bowl screens. What is a bowl screen? Most people that come in our shop that ask for pipe screens smoke left-handed tobacco. You follow me?
Absolutely.
Okay. Generally, they're not smoking pipe tobacco.
Right.
And so screens function as a way to allow the tobacco particles and dottle and whatnot to not get sucked up through through the air passageway into your mouth. So that's why we use a screen. Most people in the tobacco pipe smoking world don't use screens, but you can find them. Some people do swear by them for their pipe tobacco, and particularly to keep some of the ashes out of maybe a pipe that is drilled more liberally. If you have a pipe that has a larger airway in it, where it's more common to get flakes of tobacco shoved up in there, a bowl screen might be appropriate. We actually carry at the Squire. These are not available on our website, but you can call us if you wanted to ever order one. We carry screens that are they're not a flat screen. It's almost like a little orb shape. Screen that you poke down in the bottom of your bowl, and it actually takes up the whole bottom of your bowl. But the idea there is it's a little metal screen in a ball shape, and it just allows that bottom portion of the bowl to be preserved with air, so that you're not getting any tobacco into that area. So I don't have an opinion. I'm kind of agnostic when it comes to bowl screens because I've never used one. I've never felt the need to. I probably should, just as a tobacconist, so I know kind of what is going on there. But like I said, most of the people that come in our shop looking for screens are not smoking pipe tobacco. So having said that, moving on to cake. Cake is something, obviously we're talking about the residue that builds up on the side of the inside of your pipe. And so on a briar pipe, we like to build a decent amount of cake in order to season the pipe, like that cast iron skillet that we know and love. And so cake, the quickness of you building up cake, how long it's going to take, depends on the type of pipe tobacco you're smoking. If you're smoking a aromatic tobacco, a lot of times those tend to be much more syrupy or moist, and they're going to leave more residue on the side of a pipe bowl. They'll build up quicker. You know, and a lot of new smokers are smoking aromatic tobaccos, and so that is likely what you're experiencing. I imagine you'll build up cake pretty quick. You know, if you're smoking a Virginia blend, it's going to build up very slowly. Virginias are dry. They're, you know, they burn a little hotter, and they're dry. They're just tobaccos that don't leave a lot of residue, and so it'll take you a little longer to build a cake. But I tell you, if you build a cake out of a Virginia and you do take the time to do it, it'll be a solid cake. It builds a really good cake. So anyway, I hope that helps. You know, just take your time. If you are breaking in a new pipe, maybe fill it up halfway and smoke it all the way to the bottom for the first 4 to 6 bowls, just to build a nice cake on that bottom layer. You know, if you are smoking a Virginia tobacco or something that's non-aromatic, it may take a few bowls longer, but you'll get a sense in which that your pipe is starting to taste sweet and broken in, and it'll even probably stay lit easier and that kind of thing, and you'll enjoy it for years.
Well, there you go. Well, Kirk, great questions. Sneaking in 2-1. I love it.
I know, right?
Absolutely. And hey, if you've got some pipe question of the week for us, be sure to send it into the show. That is show at countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show at countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire
questions. Ow. At long last, the March Madness, April Madness, May Madness,
please make
June
this
Madness, July Madness has now come to its inevitable close. Shout out again to Nathan for making this incredible bracket system for us. And we've had so much fun with it. We've had a lot. We've given each other a hard time and throughout the process and everything.
Well-deserved yeah. Hard time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it does come down to this. This is the main event as the final four tobacco blenders go head-to-head in the Battle Royale, the challenge to see who will be the best in accordance with John David's opinion. That is what we are going to find out today. Please, again, at John David Cole on Twitter. His cell phone number is 60.
No.
As if they can't look up the shop's number. Anyway, okay, here we go.
Right.
All right.
You jerk.
I know. All right. Mike McNeil versus Harland Harlberg.
I gotta go with Mike. I just do. I have to go with Mike. I love the legacy of both of these tobacco blenders. I love the legacy of both the companies they have left us and the incredible blends. I gotta go with Mike McNeil.
All right, Mike McNeil going on to the championship round. All right, man. Next up, GL Peace versus Joe Lankford.
I gotta go with GL Peace. Uh-huh. I gotta go with Greg Peace.
Okay.
I do.
Okay.
Man, this is all setting up an incredible finale. And it's true. It deserves the epic nature that it is. But I gotta go with Greg.
Oh man. All right. Woo! Ladies and gentlemen, here we are. The moment that we have been waiting for months and weeks. Two titans coming into the ring. And oft legends of old, heroes and villains come a-clashing. If you think about the great battles that we see across the UFC or, I don't know, wrestling. I was never really into wrestling. But I know the whole thing is you got Cinderella stories. You got heroes. You got villains. You got the good. You got the bad. You got
spandex. Yeah.
You got the ugly as well. Thank you. Yes, with the spandex. You got it all. Man, these two, I mean, like, coming in, the talent is what is on the table for this, for the tobacco blenders bracket. Mike McNeil versus GL Peace.
I think I'm gonna go home and open a bottle of wine and just put straw in it.
Cleared out the last bottle.
No, I have to. I mean, legitimately, in my mind, Mike McNeil is the best blender in American history.
There it is.
I just believe that. I believe that. I mean, obviously, I have tons of reverence for Greg and everything he's done. And I mean, he's such a good guy and just an encouraging person and an interesting person. But man, I love Mike's blends. I think you know, the stuff he created is just extraordinary, and certainly for my flavor profile and my own flavor sensibilities. And so, yeah, I'm gonna go with Mike.
There it is. All right. I love the cathartic exercise that was laid out before us back in March. No clue of how this would end up coming to an end, but this is great. Again, shout out to Nathan for putting together this incredible weeks and weeks and weeks of content with this bracket system. Next week we will be going back to the quick fire questions, a little bit more traditional. Although I feel like, you know, for like new listeners of Country Squire Radio, this is what they perceive quick fire questions to be. Like, we've educated an entire new set of listeners as to this is quick fire questions. So
yeah,
stay tuned for next week.
Oh man, poor guys.
All right, Dave, you've got some quick fire questions, send it in to the show. That's show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
You know, before going into the listener feedback, I got to just acknowledge something, and I don't know, maybe I shouldn't, but I'm going to anyway. You know, the infamous McClellan episode, like we made people so confusingly angry for, you know, being very raw and honest with thoughts on Mike McNeil and while also complimenting, you know, his talent. And it's like, yeah.
There it is.
You got to do both. You got to do both. You know, like, people are complicated, and you got to
people. People are very complicated, man. I stand by all of it.
All of it. There you go.
I do, and I stand by all as well. The statement that I just think Mike is. I think he's the best blender America's ever produced.
There you go. All right, listener feedback. Like I said, Ethan Talley. We got Ethan Talley up here first. It says, greetings from Western North Carolina. I've been listening to Bo and JD since January of 2020. I can honestly say every episode gets better. Having listened to you experience the difficulties we all have faced through the last year and a half, you've been a blessing to me through your candor. The aspects of your faith that are so clearly expressed through your speech enhance the show. I too went to a small Southern Baptist school in South Carolina, and I found memories of sneaking off campus and enjoying a pipe, a bowl or two with good friends. Friends I still have today. The bond you show on the podcast is an example of true friendship and also shows the absolute beauty of the pipe smoking community. Past few episodes have shown that to be especially true. On a recent order from Country Squire, I decided to add the Amphora sampler to see what all the fuss was about. JD was right. It's really an underrated product. I especially enjoy the Virginia and Kentucky blends. I also added a small amount of Parsons blend, albeit I am not much of an Aero smoker these days and have received so many compliments on the room note. What a wonderful blend for anyone. Thank you for your time that you put into the show and the ministry that comes with it. You've been a wonderful encouragement to me through the pipe and through Christ. Keep up the good work, and I look forward to what is to come. And again, that is from Ethan Talley.
Man, wow. Well, Ethan, that's man, just very incredibly kind of you, and we are just very grateful for that. And thank you for man, supporting our show, supporting the shop, and that you mentioned that Amphora sampler. That is a really great thing that you can get. So the folks with Amphora, again, if you'll remember, we talked about it kind of being like the best of all the hamster cage tobaccos. And really, it's just a hamster cage tobacco because it's in a pouch. That's the only thing that makes it that way.
Okay.
It is really, it's good tobacco. It really is. And I would encourage you to try it. The Virginia and Kentucky blends that he mentions are fantastic. And they're all very affordable. But Amphora, they put together this sampler pack. We sell, you can find it at other places as well. It's got all the, you know, their main most popular flavors in there that you can try back to back, and it's really a good deal, so check it out.
All right, man, this next one comes in from Carl. What did Carl have to say?
He said, on your Shagadelic episode, JD mentioned that on the can for GLP's Penny Farthing, there's a top hat wearing man on one of those unicycle things. I thought JD would want to know that those unicycle things are called Well, this is sort of embarrassing for JD. The unicycle is called a penny farthing. And see, I didn't know that. Yeah. And that's from Carl. Apparently, that's what a unicycle is, or that particular kind is called.
Well, there
so
you go.
Now I know something.
You learned something. See, you thought you were going to be the teacher, and here we are.
I'm never a good teacher. Yeah.
Man, we got another one in from Kevin who said, hello, Bo and JD. I don't want to be a rabble rouser, but I think it's time for you two to bring down one of the supposed masters of the pipe tobacco world. All right. Well, you're going to like this. You're going to like this episode, Kevin. Here's what he says. Now, I know Greg Peace is seen as one of the great modern blenders. I have enjoyed many of his blends over the years myself, but I cannot stand by any longer to see him being hailed as the master when he is so obviously a fraud. You may be
wow.
One, yeah. Yeah. Oh, this is
this is explosive.
This is wow. fighting words. See, this is what happens when you open up. Anyway, here we go. You may be wondering how I can say this. What kind of proof do I have? I have an airtight case against him in his own words. I was smoking through a tin of Haddo's Delight and started reading through the tin notes, which is when the mystique of Greg Peace really fell away and my eyes were opened. You see, in the description of the tin, it says the following, quote, the flavor is full on the palate, earthy, slightly sweet, and intriguingly
piquant.
The overtones of figs and dun 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 raisins.
Blasphemy, gosh.
Now, as we have all learned from John David, pipe tobacco cannot taste like raisins. It just doesn't happen. So there are only two options here. Either Peace is a liar, or he doesn't have the palate necessary to be seen as one of the great blenders. Either way, I think it's time we expose him for the fraud he is. I will fight alongside of you both until this wrong is righted. Thanks and keep up the great work. And again, that is from Kevin. Kevin's cell phone number is 90. No, all right. Can I just want to.
I never, ever, 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 ever said that tobacco cannot taste like raisins. I never said that. That is not something I ever said.
I got to tell you, this was
what
such
I did say.
No, hang on. No. All right, go ahead. Go ahead.
What I did say is that. I get it. Is this turned into a rant episode? Is that what's happening right now? Pipe shop fails number 10 or whatever we're on. Like, no,
John David fails. It sounds like
John David fails, which is one of number 3,860 or whatever. Now, look, when I pull a jar down from the shelf and I let you smell it, just don't say raisins. Just don't say raisins.
It's
just
not what you're going for. No, that's fine.
Just do that for me. Don't say raisins.
All right, so I have to make
because people think they all smell like raisins.
Right. I got to tell you that when I got this email in, it was shortly thereafter.
You're chomping at the bit.
No. On the contrary, like it was shortly thereafter the episode, which we should probably no longer mention, but. And I was reading it and I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't get the,
what have we started?
Exactly. Like obviously the way I read this kind of connotated the, you know, tongue in cheek that was behind it. But when you're reading it, you don't have that. So you're like, you are not about to go on this show and like go after
and dog Greg Peace.
Like, I'm like, who do you think? Like, what do you think we are now? And then like, as I'm reading this, I get to the final punchline, dude, I was rolling. I was rolling.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, if you've listened to the show for a long time, you know that people come up to the tobacco bar and they're like, "Well, let me smell your tobaccos," and they think they all smell like raisins, and that just really, after a while, you just get tired of hearing people say they all smell like raisins. It's just none of these are legitimately, purposefully, you know, raisin flavored. Well, just stop it.
That's true of your blend, but not particularly of this blend. So there you go.
Not of Greg. No. He's better than me though.
Yeah. Well. I mean, that was never in question.
Right, exactly.
Oh, man, goodness. You're great. You're great, man.
All right, let's wrap it up.
There you go. That is going to do it for us for this week. You want to keep up with us throughout the week, you can follow John David at John David Cole. You can follow the show at Squire Radio, the shop at @_CountrySquire. But all that information and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com. Man, part two of this How to Train Your Palate series. This is becoming like, again, it's making me hungry. I did not expect that to happen. I probably should have. Now, if anything, it's just making me think we really do need to pair these various pipe tobaccos with some sort of flavorful, tangy situation.
Hey, Bo.
Yeah, huh?
Hey, Bo.
Uh-huh.
Hey, let's go have a week.
Let's go have a week.
Bye, brother. Thank you.